All right, good evening all. Very sorry for the late start here. Getting more and more challenging making it back in time for this year after Mincha Maariv, as Mincha Maariv gets later and later. It may be that in the coming weeks we may need to switch to like an official 8:45 start, if that hopefully works for everybody. Hopefully be an 8:45, but a real 8:45 rather than like a fake 8:30. So I guess stay tuned. All right, we got one thumbs up at least. Stay tuned on that. Meanwhile, let me bring up the screen here. Got some very, very interesting things to discuss tonight. Going to do things a little bit differently, see a little bit beyond Shmir Shabbos Kehilchosa tonight. See a very important tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein on the subject of Kli Shlishi. So let's pick up there. We're on Os Nun Zayin in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchosa. So the heading here, the subheading, Din Iri Kli Sheni. We're going to talk about pouring out of a Kli Sheni. That's where we left off last time. We were speaking about putting things into a Kli Sheni, whether they could or could not be cooked inside of a Kli Sheni. So a couple of interesting points, things that are soluble, so that are derived really from refined liquids that have been cooked. So even though they've already been cooked and they might be in solid form now, we basically consider them to be liquids for the purposes of Bishul on Shabbos. And therefore we're cautious, we're careful not to put them into a Kli Rishon, like sugar, even though sugar has really already been cooked. Really, once a solid has been cooked, it can be placed into a Kli Rishon. We don't. We put it into a Kli Sheni because we treat it as though it's still a liquid. However, when it comes to liquids that have already been cooked, those can be placed into a Kli Sheni. So that takes care of those kinds of things. It takes care of the sugar and takes care of a lot of instant powders and things like that. And we also spoke about how water is one of those items that is considered to be one of the chomrei habishol, that it is very difficult to fully cook water, and therefore even cold, uncooked, never before cooked water can be placed into a Kli Sheni. We also spoke about milk, how milk is already cooked. It's cooked when it's pasteurized, and therefore it can also be placed into a Kli Sheni. So once you're already dealing with a Kli Sheni, hot water inside of the Kli Sheni, there's a whole lot that can then be put inside of it, insofar as, let's say, making your cup of coffee, putting in the instant coffee and putting in the sugar and putting in the milk and even putting in maybe a splash of cold water. That could all be done once it's already inside of a Kli Sheni. You don't want those things to be inside the Kli before actually pouring the hot water in, though. Now we're going to speak about pouring out of a Kli Sheni, the possible kula there, as well as a Kli Shlishin. We'll see this first through the eyes of the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchosa. So Irimi Kli Sheni, the chain Kli Shlishi, whether this is water, hot liquid that's being poured out of a Kli Sheni. So that again means that goes from the urn into the mug, and now you're pouring from the mug into something else, or that something else, that next mug, that second mug that you're pouring into, which is really going to be now the Kli Shlishi. That'll be the third Kli. Now I'll give him the Hakel Bo. So our minig is to be Mekil, Velomar She'in Bo Mishum Iser Bishel, that you can no longer cook inside of that Kli Shlishi, let's say. And even so, Ein La'aros Mayim Chamim O Tav Shel Cham, Afilu Mikli Sheni. Nevertheless, you still shouldn't pour any hot liquids directly out of a Kli Sheni. Im Omnam Chamim Heim B'Shi'or Sheh Yatzel Edes Bahem. If it's still Yatzel Edes, Al Beitza, onto an egg, Al Ale Teh, onto tea leaves, O al davar maluach harbe, or something that is so heavily salted, she'i esher la'ochlo b'li shtifa b'mayim, or something that's so heavily salted that it can't be eaten in its present state, and it first needs to be rinsed off, kagon dag maluach, like salted fish, heavily salted fish. Could be that this is still popular. This is not talking about like lox and whitefish and sable. This is like salt cod, like something that is heavily preserved in salt, can't be eaten in its current state. It needs to first be rinsed off. Because that water, and even water at that state, even water that's simply being poured out of a Kli Sheni, so this is quite far removed at this point from the original Kli in which it was boiled. It's being poured out of the second Kli. Or even if it's landed in that third Kli, even if that water is now inside of a Kli Shlishi, you still could not put these items, these other foods, inside of it. So on the one hand, we have what's really a very, very limited list. Very limited list, which means that for the most part, anything you want to put into a Kli Shlishi, it seems that you could put into a Kli Shlishi. The problem is the items that are on the list. And in particular, I think we're probably less concerned. We're probably less concerned, let's say, about, sorry, let me just make sure that the waiting room is off. Give me one moment here. Okay, great. That we're probably less concerned about, let's say, salt cod. I don't know. Maybe you have some of you salt cod fanatics out there. We're probably less concerned about cooking raw egg and making it prepared on Shabbos. The kicker here, the real linchpin in this halacha is the aleiteh. It's the tea leaves. Tea leaves are really important. Tea leaves are really important when it comes to oneg Shabbos. Tea leaves are really important when it comes to Shabbos afternoon, Friday night, especially in the winter, a hot cup of tea. So to not be able to put that into a kli shlishi, that becomes, I don't know if it's problematic, but it becomes a bit less convenient, let's say. And this, again, we've spoken about it so many times, but this gives rise, at least in part, this is one of the reasons why many are careful to specifically prepare tea essence in advance of Shabbos to make sure that that tea concentrates, so that the tea leaves themselves are already cooked, are already steeped in that concentrated liquid, and you can simply pour that concentrated liquid out into another cup, into, let's say, another klisheni even, on Shabbos itself, because the leaves themselves have already been cooked. So for those who don't, where does this come from? Again, we've spoken about this many times. We spoke about the tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. The truth is, Rav Moshe talks about this in a couple of places, but seeing as how it's a short tshuva, we've discussed it so many times, it's so central to what so many of us either do or don't do. But the notion of having tea on Shabbos is whether it's that we are using tea bags and putting them into a kli shlishi, or it's that we're making a point specifically of using tea essence, we should at least be aware of the fact that this, not only that this tshuva exists, but I think it's really worth actually seeing it inside. So let me pull that up. Give me 1 minute here. And I'd like to actually learn this together. Sorry, 1 second. Okay. There we go. Okay, are we able to see this? All of you faceless black boxes out there, we're able to?
Yep.
Okay, good. Great.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, great. Great, great, great. Sorry to violate everybody's anonymity. Okay, so let's take a look. So this is one of those awesome tshuvos. We've spoken a lot about this in terms of the tshuvos that are included actually in the back of his svarim, in the back of Rav Eider's svarim. Rav Eider has a number of really, really interesting shilas that he sent to Rav Moshe Feinstein that are included in Ingris Moshe, and they go on for pages. And as you can see here, we are in the midst of Hilchos Shabbos, and this is part Tesvav, because this is part 15 of this shilah that he sent. And he sent like very, very practical question. This example, this particular issue, this particular issue. Sometimes his shilas, you would imagine, stretched on for many pages. And then the tshuvos also stretched on for many pages. And it's just like rapid fire, one practical case after the other. There are a number of these in Igros Moshe. Here is one of them. So here is question Tesvav that Rav Shimon Eider asked his Rebbe, asked Rav Moshe Feinstein. Hinei alei hatei, enam mevushalim ba'asiyasam, el rak miyuvashim b'chom. This is another item to be aware of, that it's not as though tea leaves are completely raw. They're dried. They're dried. They're dried in very, very low temperatures. Whenever you dry or whenever you dehydrate, you're not talking usually about using very, very, very hot temperatures. But, you know, they're dried. Think of like food dehydration, where you could even do it at home, where you cut up slices of fruit and you leave them in like a, I don't know, like a, you know, 180 degree oven for like 6 hours. And it sucks all the, it dehydrates, it sucks all the moisture out of the food slowly, slowly, slowly. So similarly, when they dry, so they have been cooked, but they haven't really been, if they've even been roasted, if you even want to consider that roasting, they certainly haven't been cooked. Is it mutter to put tea leaves into a kli shlishi on Shabbos? So what the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, just to frame this up a little bit more easily, what is different about the three foods that he mentions? What's different is that those are referred to, we spoke about chomrei habishol, these foods are considered to be kalei habishol. These are foods that we know, we have a mesorah that these foods are cooked very, very easily, very readily. So in terms of trying to figure out at what point we will say that a true malacha has been done, bishul occurs when some form of heat or hot water or hot liquid, well, that was heated up in a kli, then comes into contact with something else and changes that something else, changes that other, usually a food item, changes that other food item as a result of the heat that it imbues that item with, that other food with. So depending on the type of food, that may or may not be relevant as you get further and further away, as you get into the outer orbits from the original source of fire. Some foods will say they've only really been properly changed. That's only the true mode of cooking if they're actually placed on the fire directly or into a kli rishon. Other foods, they don't really demand that. They don't really require that. That's not really the derech. That's not really the way. They are ordinarily heated and they're ordinarily cooked even in a kli sheni. So the question is, what about when you get to a kli shlishi? What is the status of that kli shlishi when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to bishul? So let's take a look at the actual tshuva. Tshuva. Lafia niyos daiti. Lo nir ek klal lomar de ikka dvarim shemizbashlim b'kli shlishi. Says Rav Moshe that it doesn't seem to me that we should ever consider cooking to transpire on Shabbos in a kli shlishi. Once the hot water's in a kli shlishi, not considered to be bishul at all anymore. Talomatsinu ela shibichli sheni. We only find that in a kli sheni there are certain things. Yesh devarim hamizbashlim, that there are certain things that can be cooked. Umemela, and therefore, since there are certain items that can be cooked even in a kli sheni, umemela, and therefore ma'achashin anu yodein, we don't really know what's what. Therefore, yesh leesor. Kol davar. We should say that everything becomes usser. We don't know. We don't know what is considered chomrei habishul, what's considered to be kalei habishul. We don't know what takes a long time to cook, or what are the sorts of foods that demand and necessitate being placed into a kli rishon as opposed to a kli sheni. Certainly there are some things that can be cooked even in a kli sheni. Certainly there are some things that can only be cooked in a kli rishon. Since largely we're no longer expert in these areas, we just presume that everything can be cooked in a kli sheni. But Rav Moshe says that in terms of the classical sources and in terms of the Gemara, all we find discussed is a kli sheni. It's only in a kli sheni really that we find that things can actually be cooked. We don't find such precedent to say that things can even be cooked in a kli shlishi. The idea of jumping from, well, since something can readily be cooked, therefore it can be cooked in anything, that it's not just a kli sheni. When we speak about kli sheni, that it's only, we're only referring to even the outer orbits beyond the kli rishon, so long as it's still yad soledes, it can still cook, and that'll apply to a kli sheni, and it'll apply to a kli shlishi, it'll apply to a kli revi'i, and a kli chamishi, et cetera, so on and so forth. Rav Moshe says, we should not be interpreting the Gemara that way. We should not be interpreting the Gemara as saying that what is true of a kli sheni is also true of all subsequent kalim, that when the Gemara speaks about a kli sheni, what it really means is that anything beyond the kli rishon, as long as it still maintains yad soledes, it can still cook. It's not the case. We shouldn't assume that. Kli shlishi, therefore, since we find no clear-cut precedent to say that kli shlishi can cook, Rav Moshe is left to assume that it cannot, nothing can be cooked in a kli shlishi. A kli shlishi does not have the halachic propensity to be able to cook. I spoke about this maybe a couple weeks ago. Masha goes baruch ha-shulchan. Simin chin yud ches sif chaf ches. What the Aruch ha-shulchan writes about cooking tea, even in a kli shlishi, he says as follows. Deinenu ros, our very eyes see, shetem is bashel gam b'chli shlishi, that tea can even be cooked in a kli shlishi. Aruch HaShulchan says you need no further proof than the fact that when you take a tea bag or you take tea leaves and steep them in a kli shlishi, you could see them become cooked before your very eyes. Isn't that proof enough that it is usher to cook or it's usher to put them into a kli shlishi on Shabbos? Clearly, bishul is transpiring. Clearly, bishul's taking place. So Rav Moshe says, I don't know what he means. I just don't know what he's talking about. Lo move on ze. I just don't understand. I don't know what he means. I don't know what he's driving at. Umasharoin anu be'inenu. Is he referring to what we see with our eyes? Shemis admin hamayim, that the water reddens, that the water becomes colored by means of the tea leaves being steeped in them, even in a klishlishi. If that's what he's talking about, zeh eino inyan bishul. That's no way to consider bishul. That's no way to determine that bishul has taken place. Who is to say that that's what bishul means? Simply because I see that the water is becoming colored, simply because I see that the water is becoming red, since the tea leaves are steeped in that klishlishi, that doesn't mean that the klishlishi is cooking the tea leaves per se. Da'af bekar imamish. Because the truth is, even if you leave it in mamish in cold water, misadmin b'meshech zman. If you leave it in cold water long enough, it'll also become red. So another mashal, mahadavar doma, that maybe we'll appreciate, because it's the kind of thing we cook all the time in our kitchens. So if I were to tell you that it's clear that bishul takes place even in a kli chamishi, I don't know, even five steps removed from the original fire, that's still able to cook. And here's the proof. Take a handful of pasta, dry pasta, and leave it in the hot water, in the hot kli chamishi, to steep. And you'll see, and you come back and you see that everything is soft and everything is plump. That's bishul. That's actual bishul. Really? Well, what if you leave it in a cup of cold water and then you come back the next morning, or you come back, I don't know, 12 hours later, you come back 15 hours later. It's absorbed water and is now looking plump and is looking and looks completely different and has taken on a completely different character. Not every chemical change that takes place necessarily can be referred to as bishul, and necessarily indicates that a process of bishul has actually transpired. So simply because it becomes red, good, it becomes red. It'll become red even if left to steep in cold water. And nobody would argue that leaving a tea bag in cold water is an act of bishul on Shabbos, simply because it becomes red. The kol shekein b'chamin k'she'ein hayad zoledes. This is, Remisha just takes us a step further. It says, all the more so, if you're talking about that it hastens the process and goes more quickly, hold on a second. Let's say you take a tea bag and you leave it steeping, not in cold water, but let's say in tepid water. Let's say in 90 degree water. So it's not quite yad zoledes, it's warm, but it's just beneath yad zoledes, and you leave it steeping. You come back in 10 minutes, and that water is very heavily, very significantly dyed. Below zehu inyan bishul. That's not what bishul is. That's not what bishul means. So therefore, hagei atzmecha. So you can figure this out on your own. Demashin inu ros eno klum. And I'll prove you. I'll bring you another proof. The fact that what our eyes see and what our tastes can discern is by no means necessarily the line in the sand when it comes to an actual act of bishul on Shabbos. The hamelach. What about salt? Rowin anu shebicham ktsas, even in just slightly warm water, margishin tam hamelach kimo bisamo oso bicham in shayad soledes. The water will taste salty if you're preparing, let's say, me melach for the Seder. You don't really need to leave it in boiling hot water. You don't need to leave it in a kli rishon. You don't need to leave it in a kli sheni. You can leave it in just kind of like tepid water. You can leave it in 90 degree water, and that salt and that water becomes plenty salty. So just because that taste is now infused throughout that water doesn't mean therefore that that's an act of bishul. Mikol Malkum, and this would be true certainly if you actually leave it in a klisheni, and even if it is yad soledes, if it's actually 100 degree water, then all the more so. Mikol Malkum, nevertheless, halacha kurv nachman, as we say in the Gemara and Shabbos, daf mem beis, dafilu rishon lo bishul, that when it comes to salt, question is, does this apply to our salt, bizman hazeh, is it the same process or not? But at any rate, that when salt would be placed, that salt couldn't be cooked in anything but kli rishon al gabe ha'esh. Even if you put salt in a kli rishon does not have the ability to cook salt. Salt is one of those items that is considered to be the chomer habishol. And even in a kli rishon, real chomer habishol, even it couldn't even be cooked in a kli rishon. So simply because you see some sort of change in property of the mixture that you've created, of this infusion that you've made, doesn't mean that that's actually bishul, doesn't mean that bishul has transpired. And the proof is with salt. Salt, halachically speaking, cannot be said to be cooked even in a kli rishon. And yet if you leave it in a kli rishon, that water absolutely becomes salty. Vafler Yosef lo bishla ela bichli rishon. And even according to Rav Yosef, who's more machmir, he says it can be cooked in a kli rishon. Fine, but it can only be cooked in a kli rishon. It can't be cooked in a kli sheni. Afsha ein anu margishin shum chiluk betam bein melach bichli rishon ubein bichli sheni. It doesn't seem to make any difference to us. Whether you leave salt in a kli rishon or a kli sheni, the difference between keeping it in the original kli or pouring out into a second kli, either way, you add the salt and the water is going to be salty. Clearly, simply because you've changed the taste is not an indication that you have achieved bishul. Similarly, says Rav Moshe, simply because the color, the physical properties of the liquid have changed, doesn't mean that you've actually accomplished bishul. The flishnakama da abaye. I'm not sure the abbreviation. The b'klisheni nami bishla mashma the hudavka b'klisheni velo b'pachos. So according to Abaye, who says that no, it can even be cooked in a klisheni, means to say that it can only be cooked in a klisheni, but not in anything beyond, not in any orbit beyond the klisheni. Amo, you see the bishul who inyan acher shehu toeles sheika b'melech al yedei habishul yoser mehargashas tam maluach. That the question, the determination of whether or not salt has been cooked goes beyond, extends beyond simply discerning the taste of the salt in the water. Just because you could taste it, just because it's there, just because it's present, just because it's infused the water itself doesn't mean that it's actually been cooked. She says, Ika af bitzonin gamar, because it would happen even with completely cold water. The melach she'ena mevushal nami, no sintam melach ki adua mimilichas basar. That even if you salt meat, even if you salt meat, which is obviously being done while the meat is cold, it needs to be done while the meat is cold. Everybody knows that it leaves a salty taste on the meat, even though it is cold. The melicha process is being done, it's being rinsed, and it's taking place while the meat is cold and all the water that you're using is cold. When we use salt, and let's say preserving or something is steeped in brine, it absolutely infuses that item with a salty taste. Think about pickles. We consider that to be bishul with respect to iser v'heter. So it's true with respect to, let's say, kashrus, we consider that bishul. Why? Because we consider it to be an infusion of taste. When it comes to bishul of kashrus, that's the only question. That's the only consideration. Can you taste it or not? And therefore, it's considered bishul. Nobody would argue that that's considered to be bishul on Shabbos, certainly not the Oraisa. So he says that it has to be that when it comes to bishul, Chazal have given us the criteria, and that it has to be a source of heat. It has to be a kli that is close enough to the source of heat that could also cook ox meat, which is another one of the chomre habishol. So again, presumably a kli rishon, maybe even a kli rishon she'al gavei ha'esh, it's actually on the fire. Again, the point is that simply because things have changed, properties have changed within the liquid in which it was steeped and in which it was infused, doesn't mean that you've actually cooked. V'chein hu ba'aleyate. So Rav Moshe compares this now back to the tea leaves. Shemashin itz b'hamayim b'chom katan eino inyan bishul. The fact that the water will redden, the fact that the water will be dyed, even through a very, very small increase of heat, doesn't mean that you've actually cooked anything. Shalachain efshir shuhumi koshe habishul. May well be that this is something that is not cooked readily at all, that it's very difficult to cook, halachically speaking, but nevertheless, there will still be a certain transfer of its properties to the water that it's being steeped in when it's left there, even for not that lengthy a period of time, even not for a 24-hour period, even if it's just left there for a few moments or a few minutes, you'll still start to detect a certain character change in the water that it's being steeped in. Again, that's not to say that bishul has actually transpired. V'mkein, ein lanu lomar me'atzmenu klum, we are incapable of saying anything on our own, of making any of these kinds of assessments, that because it looks like, and because I can tell, and yes, this is considered bishul, and I see that bishul has transpired, who's to say? How do we know? Who's to say that bishul has at all transpired? Ella me'kabbalah, all we know is kabbalah. All we have is our mesorah. All we have is what Chazal have indicated to us is either yes, considered bishul, not considered bishul, and therefore memela hu kechol stam devarim, this should be treated like everything else. Duhu b'chlisheni safek, that in a klisheni we don't know. In a klisheni we're not sure. In a klisheni we don't know what can be cooked and what can't be cooked, and therefore basically we have to be machmir across the board, with the exception of a handful of items. But when it gets to a klishlishi, b'chlishlishi yesh lahatir. Rav Moshe sees there no grounds for distinction between tea leaves, which yes, seemingly can be readily cooked. The fact that they can be readily cooked, all that means is that we know that they'll be cooked in a klisheni, but not that we should then presume, and that we should then assume that it can also be cooked in a klishlishi, despite the fact that yes, the water is going to turn red, the water is going to change colors. That doesn't really make a difference. That's no indication whatsoever, because after all, that would even take place in a kli revi'i chamishi shishi, and even in water that wasn't yad soledes at all. Okay, so with that, we have a machlokes between Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa and Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is a known kula from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Again, I think very worth our time seeing. Let me bring, if I can, bring Shmir Shabbos.
Rabbi?
Yeah, go ahead.
Our The tea leaves that are referred to here in this tshuva, that's the same thing as tea bags? Or
so, yeah. I think that is the case, that should be presumably the case. That's what tea bags are. It might be ground to an even further degree, but that would only, meaning to say, Rivka, are you?
I was just wondering because I don't really know what's, I don't really know what's in tea bags, to tell you the truth. I know there's tea leaves, but there's also other things usually in them, like if you have herbal teas or whatever.
Okay, so that becomes another question altogether, meaning to say that when we speak about tea leaves as being kale habishal, it's one of the items that we say this can be cooked as readily as there is nothing that is cooked more easily than tea leaves. So there may be, and I've actually wondered about this, that perhaps anyway, when it comes to herbal tea, technically speaking, those are not tea leaves. Meaning you get the celestial seasonings, right? It looks like a tea bag, but it's not actual tea that's in there. Those aren't actual tea leaves. Those are all kinds of stuff. They're dried flower petals, and they're other spices that have been dried and then crushed and are in such a tiny scale that they appear just like, you know, any tea that's in anything else, but strictly speaking, it's not. It's other stuff. Nevertheless, largely we do assume that, first of all, a lot of what's in herbal tea, even if they're not tea leaves per se, like I mentioned, they are usually a lot of herbal tea is dried flower petals. It's hibiscus, which is really flower, and they're dried flower petals. That's what's in all of like the zingers. Any tea that has like bite and has kind of like a citrusy quality almost always has hibiscus. A lot of herbal teas use them, which certainly I think would be considered to be along the same lines. But basically, anytime you have anything that is crushed to such a small degree, we should probably presume is kale habishal anyway. So the question is not so much about tea leaves per se, I don't believe. It's really more of a question of when you have something that is kale habishal, where does that fall? Do we assume that there is only a suffix in a klisheni? Or maybe we'll even go so far as to say that, yes, it can be cooked in a klisheni, but there is no indication that anything can ever be cooked in a klishlishi. That's Rav Meisha's conjecture. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, Rav Shlomo Zalman, other poskim would say that no, klisheni, there's no distinction between klisheni and klishlishi. Meaning, let me put it this way. There's no such thing as a kli revi'i. Right? That's not something that we talk about in Hilchos Bishul. So what the poskim who argue with Rav Meisha would say is that there's no such thing as a klishlishi. There's no such construct really as a klishlishi, at least with respect to kali habishal. Meaning when it comes to kali habishal, what we're saying is that they can be cooked in anything. Anything that's yad saledes, you can cook that kali habishal. You can cook tea leaves. You can cook very small, dried, ground, powdery substances in anything, as long as it's yad saledes. Rav Moshe's argument is that no, there's a cap on that, that only works up to and including a Kli Sheni. Once you're in the realm of a Kli Shlishi, we don't assume that Bishul is taking place at all anymore. So no, it's not just about like tea leaves per se in the particular. I do wonder, maybe there would be a cool here when it comes to sometimes, especially like in the, you know, some of these cool new tea bags, like the tea pyramids. You know what I'm talking about? Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yes, they have large.
They're larger
pieces of things in them. I don't know what, but flowers, I guess, or other herbs.
Could be that.
There's also this thing that they sell in the shuk in Israel that they call tea, but it's really, I think, dried fruit.
Dried fruit. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. That's what you're talking about. The little cubes, right, Rifki?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right.
Cubes of like dried lemon peel and dried lime peel and like other.
Right.
Yeah. So there with those things, those are substantially larger. I think there you may have a heter even without Rav Moshe's kula. So we need to say as follows. Mm-hmm. For those who do not follow Rav Moshe, and are not reliant upon that, Sorry, just tapped out for a second. Oh, 1 second. There we go. Okay, everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So even those who are not somech on Rav Moshe's kula with respect to a kli shlishi, when it comes to other things, simply that they might call tea or that the advice is, oh, you should steep this in hot water, those larger things, like the dried fruit, in a kli shlishi, I don't believe there's any reason to presume that would fall under the same category or the same problem, so to speak, as tea.
But the herbal tea, you think we should, because we make tea since.
Right. When it comes to herbal tea, I think so. Like a regular, you know, Wasatsky herbal tea or regular like celestial seasonings, that kind of thing, I think so. The question is on some of the, unlike those larger fruit, you know, like the what do you call it? The tea pyramids, right? In that like gauzy kind of material. It's like a plastic usually that it actually steeps in. Those things may be large enough that we wouldn't say that simply because of size that they should be considered to be Kalei HaBishul. And depending on what's in them, question is what is in them? And I'm not sure. I think hibiscus may be the same problem as just jotting this down. See if I can get some more info about this for next time. That hibiscus may be the same problem as tea leaves, so that if that is a primary ingredient or even not a primary ingredient, even when some of the other elements are larger, I think you would still have the same problem, but possibly not, depending on what's actually inside of it. It's like, I'll give you an example. If you had like a large, you know, chamomile tea, right? So when it's really crushed, I don't think it makes a difference, but you can even buy like larger chamomile flowers. You usually get them in ethnic sections of the.
I buy all my tea loose. I don't buy bags. So when I buy chamomile tea, it's a big bag of flowers, tiny little flowers.
Well, actual flowers, right. We got those once. We did, I don't know if anybody remembers this, we did like a Havdalah event at the old shul once. And we did like a besamim making thing. And we got those, the whole like chamomile flowers, and we were stuffing the, you know, chamomile flowers and cinnamon sticks. So things like that. I don't know that simply because it's a flower, simply because it's a plant, we necessarily assume that it's Kali HaBishul. You know, it's kind of papery, it's kind of thin, but still they are larger flowers.
Like peppermint. Like I buy peppermint tea. All it is it's.
So that's
peppermint leaves, but that sounds like tea because they're crushed small.
Yeah, I believe so. Correct. Meaning just like any other dried herb, we'd basically consider it to be Kali HaBishul, and you need to be careful you know, putting it into a cliche, and perhaps even into a cliche again, if that's something that you're generally machmir on. But I'll try to find out about some of these other ingredients, see if there's any, see if anybody talks about them.
Could I ask one more question? Sure. We're normally makbid to make tea scents. Mm-hmm. In a situation where I forgot, am I allowed to rely on that heter for Shabbos, for that Shabbos, or no, I should stick with the
Bumrah? You really should not.
Okay.
But you should know, if you go through your backyard and then you walk down Aqueduct over the bridge, go to Rivka's house, she's a partner in crime, and you can borrow some tea essence. Yes. I just made a shit up here. So you really shouldn't.
Okay,
just like anything else, because at the very least, that's not to say that you should look askance at anyone else, but at the very least, it's almost a ned there. That's an area of Hilcha Shabbos where you've been more machmir. The other thing I'll just mention briefly, there are other considerations with using tea and using tea bags that really have nothing to do with Bishul. There are also potential schita issues. There are also potential borer issues, because the bag itself, unless you're, Rivki, when you're using loose tea, you put it in, I don't even know what they're called, but one of those.
It's a filter. You put it in a filter.
Right. Oh, interesting.
It's a metal, net, right? Like a metal mesh thing that has tiny holes in it. So that, I assume, I wouldn't be able to use anyway.
Yeah, so that is potentially that is potentially Boer. Now, you could use that just as much as you could use a tea bag. A tea bag itself is really no different. A tea bag is really a kli. It's a kli that is specialized to filter. So it's no different from using a colander. And therefore, you have to be really careful when you do pull a tea bag out of a cup of tea. We spoke about this when we were doing the shiurim on Boer. This was a while ago at this point. You should be careful when you pull a tea bag out of a cup of tea. Really, it should be, you should grab it with a spoon so that it's supported from beneath. And that way, when you pull out the tea bag in its entirety, it's not, there isn't liquid from inside of the tea bag that's dripping out of the tea bag through the paper that the tea bag is made of, through the filter that the tea bag is made of. That would really be an act of borer. What is inside is really considered to be a ta'aroves. It's really considered to be a mixture. It's a mixture of tea leaves and that little bit of water that's still trapped inside. And as you let it drip out, that really would be an act of borer. So that's another problem. Another issue potentially is that if you do take out the tea bag and you like forget yourself and you have it on a spoon, You wrap the thing around and you give it a little tug, give it a little squeeze, and that's even an issue potentially of maybe an issue of schita. It's at least an issue of boer, if not really schita. But at any rate, there are other considerations. Also, even if it's something that you forgot any given week, it's true that there is a had to do. But if it's something that ordinarily you don't operate under, it really is it's a worthwhile chumrah. It's a worthwhile.
Okay. So we'll come over either to Rivka for some tea scents or to one of our neighbors who can make us a tea without scents.
Yeah, well, whatever. We can, you can come over to our house. We can make you a coffee.
There we go. There we go.
Whatever you like. Okay, let me bring this back up. Sorry, I lost it before. Okay, fine. So let's keep going here. Again, it's such a seminal tshuva from Rav Moshe. So many are somech on that kula of Rav Moshe, I think. Whether you do or you don't utilize it personally, it's really worth seeing it inside, at least at some point. Let's take a look in Nun Ches. So now we're going to start talking about what happens when you have a solid item. And this actually changes things as well. Davar Yavesh, Habab Begushim. Let's say you have something that's solid and that's like a block. It's a literally like a gush, is like gush etzion, right? The etzion block. So it's a it's like a slab or a block or a chunk of food. Like a potato, netach basar, or let's say a piece of meat, or let's say an entire bean, like a whole kidney bean, let's say, larger, or a lima bean, some large piece of solid food. And it's hot, it's yad soledes. Yesh lahachmir bo kikli rishon. You should be careful. That should be treated as a kli rishon.
So even though it's come out of the pot, even though it's not in the original pot, it should be considered to be a kli rishon. Even if it was first transferred to a serving platter, and from that serving platter, it then ended up on my plate. If when it ends up on my plate, if it's still yad soledes, not only do I need to be careful because it's yad soledes, I need to even consider it a kli rishon. Mikevan shehu otzar b'socho es hachom, because the heat is insulated. The heat is contained within. It's insulated from the outside. And we've all had this experience that a potato, let's say on the outside, a boiled potato or a baked potato, a potato out of the chalent, let's say a whole potato out of the chalent, on the outside has already started to cool down. You cut it open and the steam starts billowing up out of it, like classic baked potato or whole roasted, let's say sweet potato. You slice it down the middle, and a whole puff or a whole cloud of steam escapes from the middle. V'lachein, therefore, ein l'shpoch marak karet. You can't pour any cold liquid on it. So if we have a concern about, let's say, I meant to check about how hot sauce is produced. I'll try to get back to you on that again. Got a lot of research to do this week. Let's say something like hot sauce. Let's even assume that hot sauce is cooked while cooked during processing. So even if that was the case, now you'd have a liquid that's already been cooked once before. So yesh bishol achar bishol balach. We are concerned about recooking hot foods, but we're only concerned about, cooking liquid foods, but we're only concerned about recooking liquid foods when it comes to a kli rishon. Can be poured into a kli sheni, like milk that's already pasteurized and already cooked, can be poured into a kli sheni, into your kli sheni cup of coffee. If the potato that's sitting on my plate, even while it's sitting on top of a kli shlishi, is still considered to be a kli rishon, it means that I can't even douse my potato with hot sauce. So ordinarily, I think things that it depends on how you, it depends on how you're heating or reheating your things, let's say Shabbos day, but this can be typically by the time we get to solid food, it's not really piping hot. Whether it never got piping hot in the first place or it's cooled down, it's hard to like get these things exactly right when you're trying to reheat and trying to use Shabbos heating or reheating appliances to be able to do the job. But certainly, let's say if you have large chunks of things that are coming out of the chalent, so that it's not completely liquid. And if you have like a large potato or you have a large piece of meat that's coming out of the chalent, then you need to be concerned that it's actually considered to be a kli rishon. Because it stores the heat inside of it. You can't pour any cold sauce, condiment, gravy on it. As we said earlier, on top of, let's say, a hot piece of meat that is on the plate. Or vice versa. If there's like a pool of liquid, a pool of ketchup, to take a hot piece of meat from the chalent and to dunk it inside, I need to assume that that hot piece of meat is actually a kli rishon. It would be like dunking a kli rishon into the ketchup. That's also a problem. So you also shouldn't put seasoning or shouldn't put, let's say, butter right on top of a hot potato. This is assuming that you're having milchigs. Probably goes without saying, or such an Israeli thing to say, I love it. Or putting a pickle on top of a piece of Yerushalmi kugel, right? That the Yerushalmi kugel is a gush, it's a block, and it's considered to be a kli rishon. It's a kli rishon. So taking a pickle, and if you're aware of that, that's a big thing. Putting a slice of pickle on top of Yerushalmi kugel. And that would be problematic on Shabbos. Aval, motor litain melach shulchan, oh, melach bishol al tapuach adama. But it would be motor to put salt on top of a hot potato, because again, as we said, salt really can't be cooked unless it's a kli rishon al gabe ha'esh. And even if we say that our salt is perhaps manufactured a little bit differently, we spoke about some room for kula last time. Chen resak agvaniyot mevushal, also known as ketchup, al netach basar cham. On top of something hot. Sorry, he says that this is. I missed this. Hold on one second. I don't have a great, maybe something about considering this to be a solid. But I'd want to see a little bit more about that. He's saying that ketchup also doesn't prove problematic. Yeah, that requires a little bit more explanation there. It's another thing to look up. Might be a matter of the actual processing, or more because it's still considered to be a solid, even after it's actually been processed. But as a general rule, it's something to be very, very cautious about when it comes to the way that either we arrange our plates or even arrange the sa'uda. So I sometimes make everybody crazy about this, but let's say we don't have chatoyani mazkir hayom. We don't have chalent every week. We don't have chalent every week. On occasion, every now and again, but we like to mix it up. But on the weeks that we do, you do need to be careful. You need to be careful not only with the things that you're adding directly to the chalent, but you also have to be careful. This is true even of the liquid that's seeping out, if it's yad saladas. You have to be careful, let's say, of intermingling of, let's say, salad dressing and the chalent. So you have to be careful about lettuce, certainly has never been cooked before. If lettuce comes into contact with something that's yad saladas, like even the liquid from the chalent that seeps out of the chalent, so that's problematic. Even if dressing, which presumably, again, I would assume, is also, I'm not sure, it's another product of all kinds of research to do. Salad dressing, I assume that anything that's shelf-stable has been cooked, but I'm not certain that that's actually true. But even if it is, even if salad dressing has already been cooked previously, if it comes into contact with a large piece of meat or a large potato from the chalent, then that would be problematic, because that chalent or that potato or that meat is considered to be a kli rishon. So it's a kli rishon interacting with liquid that has once been cooked before but has since cooled down. That's already considered to be a problem. Liquid that has cooled down, yesh bishol achar bishol belach, when it comes to a kli rishon, if the potato is a kli rishon, so then that becomes problematic. Okay, so a little bit about
Rabbi. Quick question. Even if it's onto a plate.
What do you mean? Say again.
Chalent on your plate.
Chalent on your plate. Next to salad.
Then that's already considered like the cliche-ny. And
so if the liquid. Okay, so it would work as follows. If the liquid. Is really a klishlishi by the time it's on your plate, meaning that it's gone from the chalent, from the pot, to the
ladle.
Not to the ladle for these purposes, but let's say to a serving dish, and then to your plate. So okay. Then your plate is already certainly a klishlishi. So if it's a klishlishi, then you assume, like Rav Moshe Feinstein does, that once liquid is on a klishlishi, it's no longer viable as far as bishul is concerned. So then you don't have to worry about let's say, like lettuce interacting, because that's not called bishul anymore once it's on a kli shlishi. For these purposes, we would not consider the ladle to be its own separate kli. We assume that the ladle is its own separate kli, specifically with respect to the lach, and we're going to get to this next time, of bishul achar afia and afia achar bishul. That when it comes to, let's say, challah's already been baked, but it's never been cooked. So that's really a chumrah already, and therefore, that's really a chumrah. And there is another kli that's present here. There's the ladle. We'll assume that the ladle is really a kli chayni. But when it comes to straight up bishul of, let's say, something that's actually raw, we would consider a ladle that's actually dunked into the interior of that kli rishon, or that kli chayni, we would consider it to be like the kli rishon, like the kli chayni. It doesn't represent an additional kli. So nevertheless, if the liquid is on a kli shlishi, if your plate is a kli shlishi, and you hold like Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that's how I usually operate, then you wouldn't need to be worried about cooking that lettuce. Having said that, because there are so many solid pieces when you do have chalent, you just have to be very, very careful that things don't become intermingled in any which way. The solid pieces are not considered to be a kli shlishi. They're actually considered to still be a kli rishon. Therefore, you'd have to be very, very careful. So when we do that, we try to do our best to just divide the courses in such a way that you're not dealing with real raw foods that are going to inevitably be on the same plate as the chalent. at all possible. Otherwise, just, you know.
So it's not a good idea to have like cucumber salad or coleslaw with your challen, really.
If there's any, if there's any concern, if there's any concern about large solid pieces interacting with those things directly.
Right.
So you want to either siphon the challen off and have it as its own, in its own separate bowl or its own separate plate, or have those other things as its as a separate course, or just make people crazy like me and, just tell people, oh, I got to be careful, make sure that you're keeping everything separate. It's not, they're not going to intermingle. They're not going to interact. It can be done. You just have to be very, very cautious. It's worth, at the very least, sending out reminders.
Mm-hmm. So we also to clarify, if you take the cholent from the cholent pot with a ladle and you put it in a tureen,
mm-hmm.
and then they put it on their plate. Even so, by the time it gets to their plate, the meat and the potatoes are still kli rishon.
Correct. Right. Because the actual heat is still contained inside of it. So you can be careful. You can be careful, but you just need to be careful. And you may, it oftentimes proves easier to just try to separate the courses and to have stuff that's really going to be raw, have that with, as a first course on a separate plate, and they don't have to worry as much. Or again, just, make all the requisite announcements. Be careful, because there are some solid pieces here, and the solid pieces are going to be considered a kli rishon. Just be careful. The truth is, it's not only about challenge. The reason why I'm bringing challenge as an example is because, again, usually by the time other stuff comes to the table, at least, I find, unless everybody may have, perfected it better than we have, but otherwise, it's stuff that was like sitting on the plata, or on top of another tin on top of it, because you don't want it to quite burn, but then it doesn't get quite cooked. It's not usually like really yatzaledis by the time by the time it actually gets to the table. But cholent really is, because it's sitting mamish on the flame.
So how long do you think the cholent has to sit before it's not yatzaledis anymore?
Oh, it depends on the size of the pieces. If you do like whole potatoes, then it would take longer than if they're smaller. Again, once they're cut, and if you cut it, that they're really not yatzaledis anymore. So then you could just direct people that way. It's just, again, there are many different ways to, there are many different solutions, but it's just something to be conscious of, so you can be cautious of it.
Thanks.
All right. Excellent, everyone. Thanks again for taking the time. Pleasure as always, and looking forward to continuing next week. Amir Toshem. Wishing everybody
Thank you. Good night. Thank you.
Well, have a good night. Take care.